Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're talking about the Kingdom of God, and we're going to be talking about the Corbett Report again. And we were talking originally about the Stockholm Syndrome and how fear can draw you into serving your captors and actually defending your captors and actually giving your own substance and sweat and toil for the benefit of the people who imprisoned and captured and even abused you. How do you get to that point? And do you have to have a big traumatic event in order to put these principles in play? Or could you do it on a very small basis? And of course, I was showing how in the previous hour on child abuse, wife beating, wife abuse. I knew a woman who was abused terribly by her husband, and her kids were abused. And I mean, this guy was really a crazy wacko guy, and beat her. And when she had a chance to get away from him, she chose to go back to him. And then she ended up finally leaving him. He was in trouble in jail and prison and everything else. And for other things, and she gets hooked up with another guy. Not much different. There was a girl once, I remember, she couldn't wait to get away from her father. Her father was kind of abusive. He yelled and screamed. He didn't really beat her or anything. But she fell in love with this other guy. She's 18 years old, and she couldn't wait to get married to him because he was going to be so wonderful and not like her dad. And 2 years later, two kids later, he's doing the same things. He's just yelling and screaming and abusing and oppressing her and everything. And she finally had to flee because he actually got physical and was threatening the well-being of their children. And so she flees and she goes to a home, for shelter for abused women, and eventually gets on her feet again and is supporting her kids, and she's divorced and she doesn't see him anymore. And then she meets another guy, and he's a wonderful guy, and he's so sweet and he's so nice and everything. And she marries him, and 6 months he's beating her. 6 months he's beating her. What is happening? And she realized that now they're completely responsible for what they're doing, but she's responsible for being drawn towards these guys that end up abusing her. How is that? She realized there's something in me that's drawing me to them. What is it? And you can go to a psychologist, and most of them won't get it at all. But it's fear. Fear. If you become afraid, you are traumatized emotionally, internally. You are traumatized. And we're all traumatized spiritually ever since the garden. Since we went out of the presence of God, we've been traumatized because we have this emptiness, this void. And when we feel that void, we desire it to be filled again. But in order to be filled by the proper righteous spirit of God, we have to repent. We have to admit our error, we admit our wrong, admit we ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, whatever that means. And then change our ways and go back. And then that spiritual trauma is filled with righteousness. But if we just want relief, we want to be released from the pain of the trauma, then we'll be drawn to the other way. And those that are very good at manipulating this, you know, the psychic vampires of the world, the dictators and rulers of the world, they will dangle relief in front of you. Come, let us take off the burden and let us make you feel good. And you are drawn towards that. And so men that sensed the fear that she had in her were drawn to offer dangling the carrot of security to her. And she was drawn to those men. So there was a mutual relationship here that was drawing her to a certain kind of man, and an emptiness in her own soul, in her own heart, in her own mind. Because you see, first it's an emptiness in the spirit, and then that becomes an emptiness in the psyche, in the mind, and then it becomes an actual emptiness in yourself. And then she ends up having a weight problem eventually. And she wonder where that came from. She's trying to fill a void that originally is spiritual and then has been magnified because she keeps repeating the problem in several realms. In the spiritual realm, she doesn't come to grips with that. And so therefore she repeats it in the mental or emotional realm, which are very kind of overlapping. They're actually two different things, but they're very close to each other. You know, that's why, you know, you can watch a scary movie, know it's on a movie, and you still get afraid. You know, you get big screen TV, you really get afraid. A little black and white, you don't get as afraid, but it's a TV. It's not really real, but it's in your mind. And so then it gets into your emotions and you can't hardly separate the two. You know, when I watch a movie, I see the cameraman lining up the shot. So it's not as scary, you know. I mean, I get startled if they're really clever, but I see the cameraman. I see the sound man. I see the lights guy. I see the grips. So I'm not as easily taken away by the fear that they're trying to produce. But back to her is that she's not dealing with a spiritual problem, so therefore she is condemned to be swept away with a physical and emotional problem that automatically draws her to this person who is drawn to her because of the weakness. You know, he smells the blood, and he's drawn towards her, and he's just as much a victim as she is. But the choice, the change, will take place when you change spiritually. You can change the physical to some degree and habits to some degree, and that's okay, because you have to confront the spiritual emptiness. And the spiritual emptiness is that you were made in the image of God. You had the character of God when you were originally created, but then you were remade by the world. It tempted you to sin, to break off, to separate some of the characteristics of God. It's like God is white light, and you take off some of this light and some of this frequency of light, and suddenly it's green. it's not white anymore, because you remove some of the frequencies. If you put them all back in there, then you got white light. If you remove enough of them, you got blackness, which is the absence of light. So inside of you, you have some of the missing characteristics of God. And one of the most common characteristics of God that you are missing is sacrifice. That's why the same word that you see in the Hebrew for sacrifice is the word for draw near. And you will actually be drawn near the kingdom of God, the realm of God, the influence of God, if you are willing to sacrifice. But you have to sacrifice wisely, because you have to sacrifice out of love. And love sacrifices so that others will be strengthened and will have life more abundant. Some sacrifices just throwing it all away, like cutters. They're sacrificing. That's human sacrifice, cutters. People who slash themselves to see themselves bleed. And they're giving up their life. They are engulfed in the presence of an unholy spirit that's from that other realm. See, in the other realm, they don't have a lot of that sacrifice that is for love. They have sacrifice that is loss, like the cutters. And that's what you see. That's the influence of hell, because they've been drawn near the influence of hell. So now they need to turn around and go the other way. And how do you turn around of your own? First, you have to be willing to turn around and go the other way. And what is that way? It's the opposite way of sacrificing uselessly. You know, it is sacrificing for righteousness, because that's what you're looking for. You're looking for the weightier matters of law, judgment, mercy, and faith. Don't work, don't eat. Somebody is lazy, don't feed him. Don't feed him. I don't care if you got a food kitchen. He's a lazy bum. You should fast. Go hungry. You know, if somebody has some other problem you want to help them with, I mean, how are you going to strengthen them? And so that's the kind of charity you want to have. Forgiveness. Not much forgiveness in that other realm. They're not big on forgiveness. No, they don't share power. Are you willing to empower your children to grow up to be men and women? My kids sometimes resented me for empowering them. I killed a sheep and had my daughters there, and I had it hung it up and got it all up and everything. And then I said, okay, skin it. They were getting up there, and that was kind of like, oh my gosh, you just made us do this. That's the way life is. Sometimes life makes you do things that makes you measure up. And they measured up. They did it. I mean, they weren't going to die. I wasn't leaving them hanging on a cliff or anything. And it was just a sheep. It's not like I made them do a cow or a bear or something. And I didn't make them tan the hide or any of that stuff. And I didn't make them kill the animal. I put the animal down. And we live on a sheep farm, and so we raise sheep. And so you want meat, you have to kill something to eat meat. And we usually killed older ewes and stuff. We didn't kill the young lambs. They went to market, and we ate the old because we were poor and still are. But anyway, now we have cattle too, a few cows. And so if we need meat, I wouldn't leave my 12 and 13 or 14-year-old daughter to butcher out a whole cow by itself, although they participated, some of them, in the last one we did. But anyway, that makes them stronger. That makes them more independent. Makes them more self-reliant. It also empowers them to realize, I can do this. Oh, I've done that, you know. That's no big deal. I can do that. And they can. We had a neighbor here. They had a bunch of llamas, and they had to start butchering some of them, and they needed the meat because one of them depended on a government check, and they stopped coming because the government shut down. And so they needed meat, so they, one of the llamas, they had to kill it and butcher it. And my son went down and helped them because he knew, because I did the same thing with them. Hey, there it is. Have at it. Figure out how to do it. And they do, and it makes them stronger. You help them, but not to the point where they are weak. So anyway, we're talking about this Corbett report and Stockholm Syndrome, and we're talking about fear, and one of the ways to overcome fear is to empower yourself by starting to do things for yourself that normally you think can only be done by somebody else, like the government. And you start doing it with others, and you start helping one another and strengthening one another. Iron sharpens iron. Well, you know, iron can dull iron too. Depends on how you strike them together. And how you strike them together will make a difference, which is an important thing if you're going to butcher sheep. You want that knife sharp. So anyway, see how I tie everything together? So anyway, we were talking about withdrawing consent last time, and we read this Lou Rockwell article. We didn't actually get very far into the article, but he talks about withdrawing consent does not mean being antisocial, just the opposite. Going toward a natural order of society of life. Freedom and property is the natural law alternative to the state and its artificial legalistic order. Now, it's not really all that artificial, and it is legalistic. And a lot of people want to say, oh, the government is just made up, and they just say that they're the government, and they're all illegal, and they're just stealing money from us. They're not. They're following certain principles of the law of nature, and they're getting you bound according to those principles. And you are falling for it. And it's not that they are stealing any money from you by taxing you. You owe them that money because you signed up, because you participated, because your dad sold you, because a lot of reasons. Now, I'm not going to say they're always righteous in every case. They're clearly, you know, they abuse power at times. All governments do. I mean, how many people are dead because governments abuse power? And that's going to happen because you've centralized power. Saul abused power. Yet he was the king because God said he was the king, but he was the king because God said he was the king because the people wanted to have a king. And God let him have it. I mean, I could almost hear it. It says, they keep saying they want a king, Lord, and I told them that he's going to take and take and take and take, and then we're going to cry out and you're not going to hear us. And they still want to have a king. And he says, let them have it. Yeah, it's like a right cross. The king will punish them. And that's why kings are there. That's why rulers are there, to punish the wicked. And who are the wicked? The ones that wanted to have a king instead of God reign over them. Instead of God reign in their hearts and their minds and live as free people, where the state was still vested in the individual free man. You see, that's the state. That's where the state gets its power, from the individual free man. God didn't create the state. Man created the state, what we call the state, as a government. God created the state and invested it in every man, and man took that power of the state, at which they call in the Latin the imperium, the empowerment, the imperium, and he invested it in a corporate government, in a king or a parliament or a senate or whatever. He gave them power so that they would fix it and make it right because he was too busy watching the game. You see? And he was slothful in maintaining, retaining his rights and responsibilities, and he lost his rights and responsibilities. Somebody else got them. And they got the power to make them happen. And they're taking care of the needy, and you're watching the football game. It's not about boycotting the system or being unfriendly with the unrighteous mammon. It's about you paying your taxes, but start learning what it means to do without the benefits. And that's going to take a little bit of time, so you need that time. So keep paying your taxes while you do this. And there are ways to lower your taxes legally, and I am all for that. And the church can help you do that. But you have to focus on the idea of what Christ was doing, really doing. And Christ was setting men free by bringing back the responsibility of loving one another. What religion was, the performance of your duty to God and your fellow man. And that is what the state has become, is your religion, the way in which you do that. And that's because you gave more and more power to the state, you invested more and more into it, and it's all bankrupt, and it's all lost, and it's all going away, and you have to be very forgiving of that and turn around and start doing it yourself. And you start at whatever degree you want, but you got to start doing it yourself. He says, for me personally, withdrawing consent does not mean being angry at the state. Great. Hating it or turning to violence at all. He doesn't want to do that. He says, I have never liked feeling either angry or hatred. I try to eliminate them. I do not go around confronting state people intentionally or showing hostility to them. I feel that the state is winning if it gets to me. Absolutely. This guy's a kingdom guy. I pay my taxes and register my car. I have no inclination to use violence, whatever, to the state or the state people. I have the faith that the natural order of life and freedom and property is going to prevail eventually without using violence, and that the state will someday be viewed as a perverse aberration based on the false ideas. I believe that as time goes on, even if it takes a few hundred years, I think he wanted it in there, it takes a few hundred years, the falsity of the basic idea underlying the state will become so clear to most people, or I don't know about most people, but to enough people, that they will look upon this era as mad. I agree. And uncivilized to use. You should read Thy Kingdom Come. Abraham, uncivilized. This guy's close. The ways by which freedom will win are way beyond my powers to know. The important thing is to get the tide flowing. Flowing. Mem. Flowing. Mem. That's a Hebrew letter for flowing. And this is very important to understand. Toward the justice and away from the state. Why did Jesus condemn the Pharisees? Because they failed to attend to the weightier matters. What are the weightier matters? All those regular listeners, you know, law, judgment, mercy, and faith. Faith meaning allegiance. Allegiance to what? To me? To the state? To the president? To the prime minister? To the king? Allegiance to righteousness. That's what we're looking for. Allegiance to righteousness. Important thing is to get the tide flowing. That's right. That's what we're doing on the Living Network at thelivingnetwork.org. That's what we're doing by forming congregations of record. To get the tide flowing. Get the flow going. Flow of what? Charity. You cannot have a society that maintains itself by force without ending up with despotism. You can only end up as free people if you maintain your society with charity. That's right. Free will offerings. Israel did it for years, and they beat all comers. Early Christians did it, and they survived the decline and fall of the Roman Empire. Runaway inflation, decadence, persecution, all these things. Withdrawing consent can go much deeper than these changes. It can mean seeking out the underground economy, homeschooling, leaving the country. I'm not in favor of leaving the country, but whatever God is putting on your heart, don't leave from fear. And avoid mainstream media and interpretation. A lot of people want to go down to South America as they think that's a great refuge. Not the great refuge. But if you're listening to the Holy Spirit, go where He tells you. If you're listening to the spirit of fear, I think you're making a bad mistake. Withdrawing consent does not mean being antisocial, as he says. Okay, anyway, I'm just running through here and seeing it. The scope for withdrawing consent is broad. I cannot possibly say what all it involves. What works for me is surely very different from what works for others. Actually, specifically, yes. Generally, no. Principle, absolutely not. It's the same principle. Been that way century upon century upon century. But anyway, that's the article of Michael S. Roseff. Withdrawing consent means more than it may seem, and it's at lewrockwell.com. But anyway, we were talking about the Corbett Report, which I think mentioned that particular article, so I thought I would go through that and get the last of that looked at. He also talks about the state is not great. Okay, God is not great, as according to some people. But what's happened is the state has become, the state, I should maybe capital state, we need another word, because the state originally, again, was in the individual. When he incorporated, the corporate state is not great. This corporate state has become God. And maybe we'll get a chance to talk about that a little bit here, because that's a common thing in listening to the Corbett Report when they're using these words. And I understand that the words have been so twisted around, it's hard to get them. But you have to understand when Paul's talking about God's many, when Jesus is saying, ye also are gods, when they talk about bowing down and serving other gods, making agreements with other gods, making covenants with other gods. They're talking about ruling judges. They're talking about chief justices and magistrates and presidents who can appoint chief justices and magistrates throughout the empire. When they talk about Augustus Caesar being called a god, they're talking about him being the apotheos of Rome, the appointer of gods, which meant, if you actually look at that term, and what it meant he had the right to appoint the imperial judges to decide imperial matters throughout the empire. And under Augustus and Tiberius and Caligula and Claudius, imperial matters grew more and more and more and more, a larger and larger influence. So these judges were more and more important to your day-to-day life because they all became imperial citizens of Rome, not citizens of the individual countries that they lived in. Same thing's gone on in America over the last 200 years. Used to be citizens of the states, not citizens of the United States. But now you're citizens of the United States and residents of your local states. And you can't just make that go away. People say, well, we're going to go back to the state. Well, where's your government? Because all your senators and congressmen are all federal persons. They're all citizens of the United States. They're not even citizens of the states. They're residents in the states. But they're citizens of the United States. And that gets maybe too heady for a lot of you to understand, but that's the law. I'm not making it up. But the point is, these gods were judges. And the judges got their power because you applied for benefits. No greater destroyers of liberty than the givers of gifts, gratuities, and benefits. Plutarch, 2,000 years ago. Washington was called the Plutarch of the American history. And he understood that we haven't had that kind of person. Now, every president promises you more and more benefits, more and more relief from the fear of want. And you are drawn towards them. Oh, give me, you know, the zombie land. Yeah, that would be a great movie. They have all these zombie movies. They have zombies electing a new leader. Because zombies don't seem to attack zombies. They only attack people who aren't zombies. You know, it's just like socialists. They don't eat on each other. They will eventually. But anyway, he quotes Noam Chomsky, who refers to the state as a religion. Statism is a religion. Secularism is a religion. Again, he's using that term religion as a system of belief about your God. And of course, in statism, the Supreme Court is God. It's the ruling judge. And it has a lot of these other mini gods below it. But they're all gods. They're ruling judges. And they decide good and evil for you. They fine you. Those are sin offerings. You have to pay those sin offerings. In the Old Testament, sin offerings was a free will choice. Because there was no king. And you had to be kings and queens in your own home, seeking and attending to the weightier matters of law, judgment, mercy, and faith. Your congregations were your juries who decided fact and law. You know, you've gotten away from all that. Now your judges decide fact and law. And we just wrote an article at newsandviews.com that covers this idea of juries, and it's related to several stories. And if you follow the links, you have to follow the links. My articles, there may be 1,500, 2,000 words, but follow the links. It's a book worth of information. And I even have some stories about personal experiences in there and revelations. So, but it's a wealth of knowledge at hisholychurch.org. You can read all these things. But anyway, religion is how you take care of the needy of your society. Fulfill your duty to your fellow man. And the state now does that. Didn't do that 100 years ago. There was no welfare, EBT card, socialism, social security. There wasn't even public schools to any great extent. But now, the state does all that. And you think there's not going to be an effect on your freedom? Guess again. You know, atheism is a religion. Like I said, because now religion, and we show this in an article we just put on News and Views as part of that same series, that word you use, that religion used to be this fulfillment of your performance of your duty to God and your fellow man. And now it's become what you think about the deity. And atheism thinks he doesn't exist. That's what they think about. And that's their religion by that definition of the religion. So anyway, they're basically, if we go back to the original definition 200 years ago, the religion in Bouvier's Law Dictionary at the time the Constitution mentions the word religion. And you go back to the definition of threskia, which is the Greek word for religion. Back at the time of Christ, religion was how you took care of the needy of your society. Then if we understand religion as that and not what you think about the deity, then religion, there's only two kinds. We can divide every religion up into two kinds of religion. I don't care what all the other jiggermarole that you got, you know, that, oh, we wear these robes and we blow this smoke and we throw this holy water and we bow down in this direction and all this other mumbo jumbo. You can divide all religions into two religions. One is that they believe that religion is what they think about God. And the other one is that religion is a duty. You can also divide all religions into two other categories. You need to set those two categories aside, and now we get two other categories. If religion is what you believe, you can divide all those into these two categories. If religion is your duty to God and your fellow man, you can divide all those into two categories. Those two categories are force and charity, violence and love. Those are the two categories. One is force, one is charity. If you're taking care of the needy by charity, you will end up living in a free society. You will be drawn closer to the righteousness of God. If you provide for the needy of your society by force, forcing contributions by men who exercise authority one over the other, though they call themselves benefactors, you will enter under despotism. You will lose your freedoms. You will not retain your rights. You will be slothful. You will be under tribute. That's it. Anyway, we'll talk more about this and other words like faith and allegiance when we return to Keys of the Kingdom. Things seem to be going wrong in the world today. Every aspect of our lives seems to be under attack sometimes. Many struggle to make sense out of it. What is really going on? Identifying the problem is critical to any solution. Many people claim to have answers. But what is the truth? What works? What has worked in the past? History does repeat itself, and you must learn from it. You have choices. We cannot change the course of history. but we may change our role in it. All roads lead to Rome. All roads lead to the kingdom of God. The question is, which way are you going? Join us to make sense out of it all for an iconoclastic look at the world yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and hear about the keys of the kingdom. Well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. We're talking about faith and allegiance. We're talking about the Stockholm Syndrome. We're just talking about the Corbett Report. In it, he talks to a guy named Larkin Rose. And Larkin, actually, there were two recordings. And I guess the second recording was "The State Is Not Great." And that recording, also, you can probably find in the Corbett Report's archives if you want to hear it. But in that, he had an interview with Larkin Rose. And Larkin Rose goes on for quite a while in talking about stealing. There was also, I saw a video or something that, I don't know if that was part of his deal or what. But anyway, Larkin goes on and is talking about government being this fiction and doesn't exist and all this stuff. And that it's stealing money from one group of people and giving it to another. It's not. And I understand where he's coming from, but he's in error. And in that error, I mean, he's really close. I mean, more than most people, and he's got guts and courage. I don't want to pick on anybody. I'm not trying to put him down. But I'm trying to, you know, iron sharpens iron, so you got to strike them a little bit together and make some sparks. And I'm saying that this emphasis on the fact that the government is stealing is not true. And even if it was, who are you going to call on to protect you from that stealing? You have no network that is bound together by faith, hope, and charity. You're just out there with Amalekites and Malachites everywhere, Philistines everywhere, and nobody's going to protect you. I mean, that's the thing that you can see in America. It used to be if there was a crime, thousands of people would come out. I remember reading about somebody who was murdered on an island off the coast of Massachusetts, and it was a heinous, bloody murder, and he tried to kill everybody, but fortunately somebody hid in the rocks on this island, and the next day they were able to wave down people, and the other women on the island were killed. And when their husbands came home, it was a heartbreaking thing. But when the story got to the mainland, everybody was looking for this guy. Everybody was out in the streets, and they eventually tracked him down. He headed south, and they got him on a train, and they brought him back. And every town they came to, everybody came out to the train because they were all outraged at this crime. Today, you can get raped in the streets in broad daylight and people walk by and do nothing. And you wonder why you're not free? How do we get to that point? You see, it's not just government changing. It's us changing. We are changed. There's a book here on my shelf, The Oregon Desert. It's written by Rube Long. And everything in that book is probably true. All those stories happened. They just didn't happen to him, according to one old-timer. Because I know some of the old-timers that were in that book. So that, because if it was a great story, he'd be at the center of it. But one thing he says at the beginning of the book is, many a man came to the desert thinking they would change it and were changed by it. And so all these people promising you change through socialism, they are changed by that. They are turned into marauding brute beasts. They are turned into the zombie apocalypse. And they are full of psychic vampires and werewolves and all these things that our nightmares are made out of, but they're all on a spiritual basis. But in reality, they will eat you. They will take a bite out of you. They will, because they covet. And they are looking for coveting leadership. And that's the nature, the spiritual nature of society is changing. And your only defense against that is that you stop whining about what they're taking and start praying about what you should be giving. And just speaking out is not enough. You have to come together with the intention of being the government of the people, for the people, and by the people. Not to rule over one another, but to love one another. This is what Christ is saying. He's talking about good government. He's talking about righteous government. He's talking about a government of the people, for the people, and by the people. That phrase came from the Bible. In the introduction to the Wycliffe Bible, that's what he's describing the book. The Bible is for the government of the people, for the people, and by the people. You didn't think Abraham Lincoln made that up, do you? He got that out of the Wycliffe Bible. We do need leaders. We need leaders in righteousness. In the Bible, there are several different words that are translated into ruler and different words that are translated into leader. And if you don't know which one was used there, you could get a false impression of what the Bible is talking about. Because the apostles were leaders, but they couldn't exercise authority. They were titular. In a republic, a leader is titular. Name only. He doesn't have the power to rule over you. He gets what you give him. No forced taxes. All free will offerings. This is what they're talking about in the Old Testament under Moses. They weren't burning up sheep. That was the offering to take care of the needy of society. And the reins of control of those offerings were given to the Levite of your choice because you saw him doing a good job with it. It says he'd give him the kidneys. The same word for kidney in the Hebrew is the word for reins of control. It's translated reins 18 times. You're giving him control of your offering. You weren't burning it up, setting it on fire. This is all made up by the Pharisees, which might as well have been Philistines. And there was a whole group of people that lived at the time of Christ and before that said that the interpretation of animal sacrifice, where you burn up animals on piles of stone, was a fiction and a fraud, and they read the Torah daily. How did they come to a completely different conclusion reading the exact same book? Because translators are traitors. It's there. Once you understand the metaphors, once you understand the pictorial nature of the language, you can figure this out. And you can, and you, when you read it, you know, well, I know what they're talking about there. He's not talking about piles of stone. He's talking about friends. Because the same word for a gathering of stones is the same word for a gathering of friends. Same word. That's what the altars are. They were living stones back then. Jesus did away with the false interpretation of Moses. Jesus and Moses were in agreement. They're both talking about good government. And back to that, if you think religion is what you think about God and you want to enforce that on somebody else, then you're over there in that fourth side of the categories of religion. You're not in the charity side of the categories of religion. So stop imposing your personal and private interpretation of doctrine on other people. And get back to the fundamentals of loving one another as Christ loved us. Coming to serve one another in righteousness, to strengthen the poor. What was the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah? Sodomy? Homosexuality? Bestiality? Was those the sins? Those are the symptoms. The sin of Sodom and Gomorrah, and it says that right in the Bible, that in a time of affluence, they did not strengthen the poor. Didn't say they didn't give to the poor. Said they did not strengthen the poor. If you give these guys power to force the contributions of the people, you will have Sauls in every bureaucracy of the country, and they will abuse their power. But they shouldn't have it to begin with. You have sinned against those bureaucracies because you gave them the power because you were slothful and covetous. So I just turned it back on you. You're the fault. You're the reason that governments are tyrants today. You're the reason. You're sloth. The Bible tells you the slothful should be under tribute. Yeah, and there was talk about anarchy. Anarchy is not violence or chaos. You can have a violent and chaotic anarchy. Anarchy is without that exercising authority. Leaders that do not exercise authority one over the other. Christ said it wasn't to be that way with you. You cannot be looking to benefactors who exercise authority to obtain benefits and rewards and call yourself a Christian, because that's the opposite way Christ said to go. You're not following Christ. If a Christian is someone who follows Christ, that's not following him. So that means home health, home education, home emergency ministry auxiliary, all done by faith, free will offerings. God versus government. You know, I told you at the beginning of this recording about Apotheos of Rome appointed all the judges. Well, who appoints all the judges in the United States? Who appoints them in Australia? In the United States, it's the president. Did you know what the painting on the dome of the Capitol dome is? Apotheos. Apotheos of Washington. On the U.S. government website, it says it raises Washington to the rank of God. And it does, because he appoints all the judges who rule over you. Now, why do the judges, the federal judges, have so much power over your day-to-day life? Because you were covetous. Through covetousness, they shall make merchandise of you. That's what Peter is saying. With feigned words, they will promise you liberty, but deliver you into bondage. Peter's telling you that. The whole world would be under a strong delusion. They're telling you. That's where you're at now. Now, but you, that's great news, because now you know. Now you can do something about it. Now you can start to consent to Christ. Start loving one another, gathering together in small, intimate congregations linked explicitly with other congregations, what we call congregations of record. So you know who you got to watch. I got to watch out for these 10 guys, and I'm connected with these 9 other guys, and they're each watching out after 10 guys, but they have no power except instead of laying your right to choose on the altar of the state, you only lay offerings and you give your minister the right to choose over it and how he handles it. And if he doesn't do a good job, you don't give him next week. Now, who's the state? You're the state because you decide the allocation of funds, at least today. I mean, you have to let go so that he, because it's about empowering others. Everything that's going to lead to your freedom is about empowering others. You give your kids responsibility and say, you, this is your job. You do it. And he learns to do that job and he becomes a better person for it. You take a minister, you give, say, here's $50. Use this for the poor. And you watch him. It's small, intimate congregations, so you know where it's going. And you watch him. He does a good job, give him $50 again. He doesn't do a good job, you tell him, I'm not going to give you $50. I think you wasted a lot of that. I'll give you $40. Or maybe I won't give you anything. I'm going to pick a new minister because I think I've given you enough chances. You're the power. You're the kings and priests. Always was supposed to be that way. You still have the high priests in your family, the kings in your family. In ancient Israel, the Levites were the priests of a nation. You only gave them to take care of the job. You never gave them your right to choose, only over stuff. And if they didn't do a good job, you stopped. You had the purse strings. You were the state. You're no more that. So the government does exist. It exists by tacitory and constructive contracts that are cognizable in courts of law. You went and got public education. Your parents got you registered for benefits. You used to pay in. And go read Call No Man Father on Earth. Jesus said that. Go read that on our website, hisholychurch.org. Search engine up in the top right hand corner. Just click on that little guy peering out and a Google search engine will appear and type in Call No Man Father and it should appear in several different formats, or go to the outline page and search it and read that, because it will tell you why you've returned to the bondage of Egypt. And then you can go read employee versus enslaved and understand the technicalities of that law. You want to be free of that? You got to change your ways deep down, spiritually, in you. And then manifest that in taking care of one another and becoming that government of God. And when the system collapses, you'll do okay. God will bless you. And if you don't do that, well, then go cry unto the gods which you have chosen for yourself. That's what the Bible says in several places. Because you've chosen these other men to decide for you. You gave up your power as the state to other men. You see, this is what Christ was saying. This is what Moses was saying. This is what Abraham was saying. This is what all the prophets were saying. And you've gone whoring the wrong way. Worse than ever before in any history that I've come across. And that's where we're at today. But some of us are turning around, going the other way. So anyway, emperors were not gods on the earth or divine right of kings and all the stuff that they talk about. When you guys talk about this, you need a little course in natural law. And that's why I point out this apotheos thing, is that because, I mean, your modern Christians don't know, and I know this information is not everywhere, and I can't cover it all in a recording, which is why I write these books and I give them away for free. Anyway, you also need to understand the difference between a republic and a democracy. The United States is not a republic, never was. You read the Constitution, you know it's not a republic. But the people were free from the United States. They weren't a party to the Constitution. It wasn't put to them for a vote because it wasn't about the people. We the people were the people's names at the bottom, and all the names of senators and congressmen and other people who became a part of the United States. That's what the United States was. Now you're maybe a part of it, but you weren't originally. It was never put to a vote. But now you're in debt. And so you can't just, opt out. You can't just withdraw consent with some kind of, I sent in a letter and told them I'm withdrawing. It doesn't work. And I can show you right in the law that they can chase you for 10 years, take every dime you have and everything you produce. And they can chase you out of the country, and no matter where you go, because that's the term, because they're in debt. And that was a few years ago. It's probably even worse now. Anyway, he quotes a little bit of Bakunin, and I won't go into that guy. He's a Russian. He missed a lot of this stuff, too, because he doesn't understand some of these relationships of law, natural law. See, natural law is the law in which everything is created. And once you understand the natural law, what did Jesus say the weightier matters were? Law, judgment, mercy, and faith. The law he's talking about is the natural law in which all legal systems are created. Legal systems they're not just invented by bureaucrats. They actually follow, they get you. How does the mafia work? Maybe that'll help you. The mafia is a government. The mafia wants to get your loyalty. They have to get you to commit a crime. You kill them, Joey, and you take care of this, and we'll take care of you, because you'll now be one of them. And so they get you to commit a crime. Well, what crime is the governments of the world getting you to commit that brings you into their fold? They got you to covet your neighbor's goods. That's right. You wanted benefits at the expense of your neighbor. That's coveting your neighbor's goods. That's a crime, according to the Ten Commandments. They got you to make agreements, sign here under penalty of perjury. Jesus says stop the taking of oaths. James says above all else, stop the taking of oaths. Now, how do you stop that now and survive in this world? You don't have a place to stand. You need to form what the early church was doing, what Christ was showing them how to do, what the apostles were doing in Acts, taking care of the daily ministration by faith, hope, and charity, and titular leaders who were servants. That takes a certain kind of person. I can find you all kinds of people who want to be free, but I can't find all kinds of people who want to be righteous. Now, we're not looking for people who want to be free. But if you will be righteous and seek the righteousness of God, you will be free. That's what I believe. But that's my religion. So anyway, he brings up another word, democide, which I thought was kind of interesting. R.J. Rommel talks about international murder of governments, of killing over 262 million people. Now, this is not the deaths they caused. This is the deaths they did, the murders they did. They caused even more deaths than that by the circumstances and the havoc that they raised and starvation. And, one of the interesting figures, the death toll in World War I, 3% of the people who died in World War I were civilians. What do you think the percent of people who died who were civilians in World War II? 10%? 20%? 50%? 67% of the people who died in World War II were civilians. That's a war crime, folks. And America was not exempt from that. I'm sorry. Awful lot of civilians died. I mean, we bombed whole cities. They talk about the Blitzkrieg and bombing London. You can go to London. There's all kinds of old buildings all over London. You go to Berlin. You hardly find a building older than 1945. And there wasn't nothing left, or Cologne or any of those places. And those were civilians that we were bombing there. And a lot of them died because there wasn't any more oxygen in town. I mean, it was amazing. We did the same thing kind of in Japan, different level. But point is, war is hell. And governments are a symptom of the fact that you're drawing nearer to the ways of hell than you are to the ways of heaven. And you're drawing nearer because you're not pursuing the ways of heaven with your whole heart, mind, and soul. And you need to be doing that. I don't care about all the other boogaboo and rituals and blowing smoke. I'm talking about what Christ was talking about, loving one another. And you have to find others like that and come together with them. 262 million people, he pointed out, and I thought this was kind of interesting to get your mind around that. If you're dealing with a 5 foot tall person, which is actually kind of short in my family, but I guess they kill a lot of babies too, and women. But even we got women in our family over 6 foot when they were 12. So, but 262 million people, 5 foot tall or so, wrapped toe to head, will go around the earth 10 times. Killed by government. Governments are more to be feared than criminals. Now, they have a right to exist because you gave them the right to exist. And you live in the world where they are. What you need to do is what Christ said, not live of that world, that government, that constitutional order and system of government, but live by faith, hope, and charity in the perfect law of liberty, which means the church established by Christ. Not the church established by the government, not the church established by so many of these false religions. If they're not doing something to set you free, they're not probably following Christ. Read about us on the website. What happens, though, is when you go into these systems, you know, governments have killed more people, 6 times more, according to this, in the century, were killed by governments, not by wars. If you count what the wars killed as a separate figure, and what the governments specifically killed, killing their own citizens of the people under their control, 6 times more were killed than by war. You know, it's kind of like, you know, guns don't kill people, doctors do. Governments do. And now I'm not saying do away with governments, because those people need those governments have a purpose to punish the wicked. And who are the wicked? It's the people who look to those governments, who reject God and his ways. Now, there are so many of them, you're going to need God's grace and benevolence to protect you. You're not going to get it unless you put on the character of Christ and draw near his ways. And so that's why you gather together, not to feel good in church, not so that you go to heaven when you die. The kingdom of heaven is for the living, Christ says, not for the dead. It's for right now. It's at hand. But you got to change your ways. And if you don't, if you go the way the government wants you to go, the socialist way, you will become an orc, a goblin, and a yurikai. It will change you. You know, in that movie where the orcs and the goblins and the yurikai of Tolkien's story, these were men and elves and dwarves that were changed by the way that they live their life. If you change and go the other way, you will change the other way. But you have to repent, turn around, and go the other way. Bakunin talks about spontaneous acts of the people. Orcs, goblins, and yurikai have spontaneous acts too. They will create a society, and it will look a certain way. And those that put on the character of Christ, of forgiveness and giving and courage and strength and service and sacrifice, they will create another society, community, and state. Not a collective state, but a state bound by invisible bonds of love. And all the rituals of ancient Israel, the way they were originally intended, not the way we see them through the eyes of the Pharisees, which is the way most Christians see them, were intended to expand and bind society together by that love of one another and community, not through some mindless rituals that, you know, you do this and blow smoke here and throw water here, that suddenly God's going to be happy with you. You have to repent, turn around, and go the other way. So anyway, that ends my Corbett report, and maybe we'll give them these recordings, and we'll see where it leads. Until then, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.